The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Welcome to The Money Show. It is Friday evening. It is 7 minutes past six. The Money Show is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that believes long-term partnerships deliver sustainable results. That's African Asity. Absa is a registered FSP. Well, all hell breaking loose at Tonga today. An investigation instigated by the new management of the company into the old management of the company comes up with a tale of woes that is unprecedented. It smells like Steinhoff, frankly. So we talked to the activist fund manager Chris Logan this evening about that. Black Friday, I don't know how you experienced it. It looked like an absolute hell show. People fighting over all kinds of things, looking for deals, looking for bargains. Lots of desperation in society. Lots of people saving money for today in order to get the deals. And when it comes down to it and there's only one item left, people get a bit testy, a bit pushy. Did you see anything bad today, I wonder? Let's talk to Jacques Celier, the chief executive at FNB. You've been posting graphs today, Jacques, showing the increases year on year, hour by hour, of the huge volume increases in transactions per second that you've seen today.
Yo, Bruce, it's been a lovely day if you're a technology person interested to see if you can sort of prove yourself in handling volumes and complexity of catering. I mean, you know, we do more than a third of the country's flows go through our infrastructure. And, you know, one of the plastics is an FNB plastic. So it's an incredible day to prove the volumes and the capacity of the industry. You know, I don't know if everyone knows how much work goes into facilitating a day like today, not only in the banking infrastructure, but in the retail infrastructure. It's a massive commitment. So on that side, awesome. But it has been, I think, chaotic for many people trying to experience the sales and the experiences on the ground was tough for shoppers.
But at one point, you were doing nearly 3,000 transactions per second.
Yeah. So our main infrastructure handles sort of in the thousands per second as peak volumes. I mean, today was actually quite an interesting day. A lot of things came together. Today was the end of November, so it's a month end. It obviously came at the end of, you know, most people have had their salaries for the month, and then obviously on top of that was the Black Friday volume. So we anticipated a massive spike, and it turned out as we thought. You know, last night we had our innovator judging competition awards, where we dished out 15 million rands towards all the people that have the wonderful innovations for us for the year. And we had to cut it short for many of the teams that had to go back and be ready for the volume. So,
yeah, well done. Go back to work. Yes.
Yeah, it was a lovely experience for the guys. And interestingly, I mean, people sort of say, you know, sort of what are you looking for? And I mean, we're hoping that the shopping was responsible shopping and people buying into the bargain so that they can actually manage the cash flow better. So that will only... We'll only have to be able to see that through the whole month. So hopefully it all rolls out and then people had a good experience in the end in their financials.
Can you give us a split at this stage between how much was cash and how much was credit, or how much was debit cards and how much was credit cards?
No, I think we're still rolling up the books, and obviously there's still a few hours left. But those stats will come in a bit later. I mean, on the acquiring side, clearly acquiring doesn't do 2,500 or 2,800 transactions per second. It only does 300 transactions per second. But so you need to add, you know, the mainframe activity, which is normal monthly volumes on payments, with the increased shopping. So those stats will only come through a bit later.
And no systems seem to have broken down today. I mean, you haven't heard of any systems cracking today?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I say. I think compliments to all the technology people across, you know, the country. I mean, to handle today's spike. And what is, I think, you know, a tough thing for infrastructure is always to handle spikes. You know, it's like us in the banks, a month-end spike. You know, if you can stagger things a little bit more gradually. So some of the retailers obviously helped. They started having specials earlier in the week so that we can get some earlier volumes and some stuff through. Otherwise, you know, it really is peaks on one day. That's not healthy for any infrastructure. And then also, you know, this is nice to have these sort of volumes now, hoping that through the month of December we'll have less spikes. So that we can actually go calmer through the December cycle. Black Friday certainly has taken a lot of pressure off the traditional Christmas Day shopping, which happened, you know, sort of 23rd, 24th always in the past. So we're hoping this is a nice, more staggered December. So no, it's going to be interesting.
Thank you, Jacques Salib, Chief Executive at FNB, but nearly 3,000 transactions a second going through that infrastructure. And yeah, I've seen no complaints about TakeALot going down or any one of the big websites going down. It seems to have worked rather well. Yeah, and as he says, hopefully people have made sensible purchasing decisions.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. And 92.7. And 106 FM.
Another day in details of yet another sordid corporate scandal. We've been aware for a while now that Tongaat was accused of cheating on its financials. Today, the gory detail. Company ordered an investigation after its new chief executive, Gavin Hudson, was appointed. And he says the company will institute civil claims against former top executives, including former CEO Peter Staudy. The company will also contact the National Prosecuting Authority and police over misstatements in its financial reports. It's hard-hitting stuff. It's been a six-month probe by PwC. Chris Logan is fund manager at Opportune Investments. This is not the first, and it's certainly not going to be the last one, Chris Logan, but this does smell a lot like Steinhoff in many respects. What's your reading of it?
Yes, hi, Bruce. No, exactly. I think it does smell like Steinhoff. I think the underlying wrongdoing, though, was far less sophisticated. You know, there weren't all these offshore structures and third parties. So it was far more basic.
Yeah, it does seem like amateur hour, if you'll forgive me. I mean, PwC found the profits and assets had been overstated in earnings reports. I mean, this is a lot of the stuff is quite simplistic when you look at it. And it does really question the role of auditors. Deloitte were the auditors of Steinhoff. Deloitte were the auditors at Tongaat. At some point, auditors have got to start taking responsibility for not picking up the sort of basic things, accounting decisions that were being taken internally.
Correct. Well, you know, PwC is the beneficiary of all this because they're making a business out of audit failure. And very nice business.
So what is your reading of what went wrong within Tongaat? I mean, there's so many aspects to this thing, but at its barest essence, what was it?
Bruce, I think more than anything, it was a failure of strategy. You know, I think it wasn't so much criminal wrongdoing or personal enrichment directly. It was they allocated capital incorrectly. And by that, I mean they sold something like 11 billion rand of prime personal property and then put something like 13 billion into sugar. They had this huge bet on sugar, that sugar would increase in price and they would do very well through these investments. And that bet went increasingly against them. So I think it was more massaging figures in the hope that, you know, the sugar market would eventually come back. But it was a crazy bet, you know, executed by a CEO who is very, very bright and everyone deferred to. You know, I don't think it was like what we've been led to believe at Steinhoff, you know, where there was transactions with the CEO where he was essentially front-running the company. So it is of a different nature. Of course, it's been totally tragic. And yes, there was a degree of personal enrichment through the bonuses and that, which were pretty substantial. But I would somewhat draw a difference. Although, as we've seen, you know, looks like criminal conduct.
I mean, there were backdating agreements for significant transactions and corporate actions. They were recognizing sales before approvals were given. The directors did benefit from non-arm's length transactions. I mean, there was an overstating of the carrying amount of assets, for example, and that happened within Steinhoff. There were undesirable accounting practices in both. There was this culture of deference to the CEO, and the report is quite damning, and it's reminiscent also of Sasol, where bad news didn't flow up in Sasol when it came to Lake Charles. Bad news didn't seem to be tolerated within Tongaat either, and that is a common thread coming through many corporates. I think we knew it was always there, but this is the consequence of having these very strong top-down management structures.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know because I was, Tongaat was the first place I ever worked way back when. And, you know, I come from Natal, so it's a company close to my heart. You know, Stoudy didn't like being challenged. He resisted it. I mean, you know, the articles for the day, and you sort of told, you know, we deal with that privately. The AGM isn't for questions type of thing. So, yeah, this culture of deference seems to pervade corporate South Africa, and it's very unfortunate. But it's not everywhere.
No, it's not. But when we're looking at company failures or failings within companies, it's coming through as a very, very strong theme. And it's a theme that, you know, people within companies have got to be very well aware of, because if you've got a toxic culture within a business, it could count against you and your career in the long term. And investors have got to have a look at this thing as well and say it's a failure of governance if you don't have proper corporate governance. Governance is supposed to mitigate against the all-powerful, almighty boss.
Correct. Well, if you read the report carefully, it looks like Tongaat are expected to be sued. You know, they say so. The report's been prepared for action which they're contemplating against individuals, and for action which, you know, they expect to be taken against them. It was wholesale failure here. So, you know, from what we know, it's not unreasonable that people who've lost money because of all these statements and these actions, you know, possibly institute action against Tongaat to recover money. So wholesale failure once again.
I suppose one's got to give credit where it's due also to the new management team for instigating the investigations, because, I mean, when you look at state failure and the state's incapacity to do these sorts of investigations, without a management team, a new management team coming in saying we need to investigate ourselves to get rid of the rot, hopefully this doesn't break the company altogether.
I think you must give credit to Gavin Hudson. He picked up, I think it was within 2 or 3 weeks, that something was wrong. And he wasn't doing a forensic investigation. He was doing a business review. So he clearly, very quickly, picked up that things were wrong and, you know, started this whole ball running, this process. So, yeah. And once again, though, you know, the new guy could pick up within 2 or 3 weeks that something was rotten.
What was Deloitte doing with highly paid auditors and highly paid big fees for years, not picking up what the new CEO picked up in a couple of weeks?
Correct. And, you know, it was clear from then, if you analyze the company, that things weren't adding up. As I say, with this massive capex, you know, going into sugar and, you know, the debt rising consistently, even though there's massive land sales.
Chris Logan, thank you. Fund manager at Opportune Investments this evening. His first job at Tongaat. Learned something new on that particular front. But yeah, what a shambles. Like the sign-off report, it's not public. There is a redacted version on the, or a light version, L-I-T-E version, which is available online. It makes for fascinating reading. Certain senior executives, this is a quote from the report, certain senior executives initiated or participated in undesirable accounting practices that resulted, among others, in revenue being recognized in earlier reporting periods than should have been, and expenses being inappropriately capitalized to assets. These are the oldest jokes in the accounting profession. And they're not even, they're jokes. I mean, that's how amateurish this stuff is. And they fudged it for years. And yeah, Deloitte's got a lot to answer for in terms of this. Tongaat is saying also that there was deference and a lack of challenge to senior executives. It comes through time and time and time again.
The Money Show. The Markets.
Gary McNamara from Sunland Private Wealth is in studio. But before we talk about that, just things have gone eerily silent on the SAA front. Any backroom deals that could be done to save SAA? Of course, you've been hearing on Eyewitness News today how Flight Centre say it won't sell any more of the airline's tickets until there's clarity about its future. Suntum owns travel insurance consultants, and they're not insuring any tickets against the airline insolvency. So big companies are going, no, we're not going to take this risk, and we're not going to let our customers take this risk. And so let's say SAA does survive this, they're losing out on days of sales. They're going to have to come back with a bang, with some magic trick. And it's a terrible time of the year to pull the plug on SAA. I mean, if government does go ahead and do what they're being encouraged in many circles to do, it's going to be 6,000 jobs gone, as we were warned would be the case at the beginning of the strike that happened, what, 2 weeks ago now. And, you know, this was likely to happen anyway. It really was. But the strike has just exacerbated and brought the inevitable forward. Unless there's some miracle in the background and Ethiopian Airways decides it wants to take a chunk of SAA. But why would they want to buy a broken airline unless they get huge elements of management control? Unless they're allowed to come in and slash as much as they want to in order to get the airline more efficient. I don't know how this is going to do, but you just hope 6,000 people don't get out of work, but they might.
The Money Show. The Markets.
Gary McNamara, he is with Sanlam Private Wealth. Black Friday today, Gary McNamara. Black Friday for Telkom and Cell C, or maybe relief for both. Cell C doesn't want Telkom to come in and buy it, and Telkom shareholders certainly didn't want that company to buy Cell C. So we saw Telkom share price quite nicely on the day.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think particularly the Telkom side recovered quite nicely. I think the problem that you've got sitting here is how much that debt's going to get picked up. There's been a lot of people with deep pockets previously trying to get this thing right with Cell C. There's an attractive book. 22 million customers would be the combined number, but by the same token, it comes with its risks and nobody's got it right for a long period of time. So yeah, kick it down the road.
And Telkom's got a problem now as well, because it needs scale. It wants to be a big gorilla in the fight against MTN and Vodacom, which are running circles around it. It's grown organically very nicely, but this would have given it the customer numbers it needed to bulk up its operations.
It would do, but bearing in mind it'd still be by quite at some distance the third mobile operator, which is always a difficult place to play. But they did need the numbers, but by the same token, they clearly weren't prepared to pay as much as LC wanted.
And I wonder whether this means then that foreigners come in and lurk and see whether or not they can come and buy up Telkom and LC at some point in the future. Because if they're too small to fight alone and they're not prepared to do a deal with each other, maybe it takes an Orange or one of those guys to come in and get quite serious about building a real competitor to MTN and Vodacom.
Well, I'm sure a certain Blue would also like somebody to be looking to buy them as well.
Yeah.
Take that problem off their balance sheet, because they've been a big casualty of the Cell C failure, where they also tried with very poor results to try and turn the story around. So I don't know who else is going to come in.
Yeah, we'll absolutely. See. Tonga, that scandal. Just how bad is it?
Bruce, difficult. We'll probably have to wait for the financials, but it's a very sad story. It's a company with a lot of history, over 100 years of history, institution in the Natal region. And I think, again, it's a case of management not wanting to tell the market the bad news, kick it down the road because of perhaps share options or some sort of incentive structure that they've got. And eventually you just can't keep kicking the can down the road, and something triggers, maybe less land sales going forward, and then the can of worms comes home to roost. So I think it's a conflict of interest again.
Yeah, I mean, this was a whistleblower within the organization that tipped off the new chief executive and said, why don't you have a look here, 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 and here. And the new CEO went, this is not good. Called in competing auditors to the existing auditors, who've unpacked a scandal.
Absolutely, and in quite quick time as well. If you bear it in context to the Steinhoff things, as you said earlier, I think it's a much less complex problem to deal with. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how those numbers come out, because the share is currently suspended, and to try and fix this problem, they're probably going to need to have some sort of capital raise, however that takes and what form, I'm not sure.
And nobody's going to want to put more capital into this business until they can be sure there are not too many liabilities, because if people are going to sue for losses over time, that could break the company.
Absolutely, and we've seen the legal class actions that we saw in Steinhoff. It's the last thing management want, but they are talking about going after individuals to repay the money, but it's certainly never going to bring back the capital value that was lost on the market from that side. So it's one that they've got to manage with careful attention, but by the same token, I think people need to be held accountable for their actions, and I think in this case, it certainly looks like people might be.
And then we look at 91. It's going to be hard to get used to this. 91, Investec Asset Management, the split confirmed today to be happening in March. And they've got their new boards in place. And you look at Coronation and Coronation's performance and the huge pressure that it's come under recently in the public disclosures. I suppose Investec Asset Management's always had that by their Investec listing. Are you excited by having another asset manager in the public domain?
Bruce, I think it's certainly a way of realizing the value in the share. It's a share that's really battled over the last couple of years. if you split the asset management, the banking side, on our numbers, the banking side, you're really getting the asset management side for free. You're paying for the assets and you're not paying a lot for the bank. Obviously, they've had their mixed results in the UK with the Brexit uncertainty, but you're getting the asset management, which is actually the jewel in the crown, in our view, for nothing as it currently stands. So I think there's quite a nice upside, but management will also have to prove to the market that they can beat their cost of capital and the return on equity. And then I think you can get quite a nice re-rating in the bank. And I think there's some attractive upside. And certainly the new management team are very intent on realizing shareholder value, hopefully.
Well, they built the business from scratch. And it's in their best interest to ensure that it does deliver. Gary McNamara, thank you. He is with Sanlam Private Wealth.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that believes long-term partnerships deliver sustainable results. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Welcome to The Money Show. In a moment, Butler with sport will then bring you some of the best bits from the week that has been, and we will wrap it all up with the brutal biz quiz this Friday night. Coming up on the next Money Show, tech guy Toby Shapshack, our Make Money Monday's guest. I'm terrified already, quite frankly. He's a fruity-mouthed fellow, is our Toby Shapshack, but I'm really interested in finding out how he deals with money. Stock Pick Monday with Imtiaz Suleiman from Centio Capital, plus all the big money stories, of course, and your business book of the week. That's all coming up on the next Money Show.
Bruce Whitfield on 702.
So, Ford has been fined 35 million rand for selling cougars even when some of them were catching fire. And the company has settled 160 complaints. Ford says it's done repairs and replacements, but has offered an additional 50,000 rand per each case. They can also, if you're one of the people who fell foul of the exploding cougars, you can go to a Ford-funded arbitration if you think that you actually cost you more than the 50,000 rand settlement. And that's going to be run by Advocate Terry Mutau, who is a smart operator when it comes to these sorts of arbitrations. Or you can go to court. Does anybody have the energy for that? And you've got to absorb the cost of that if you lose. But what's curious to me is I don't know what happened to the case of Rashal Jimmy. His family claimed he died as a result of his cougar going up in flames. There was an inquest, but was there ever an outcome to that inquest? I don't remember. And no information I could find today suggested that there had been an outcome. On to the best bits of the day, of the week that has been, and our ailing power utility has been in the news far too much. Power utilities should be a bit like auditors and should be a bit like, you know, those sorts of people. You should never hear about them. You should never have to worry about people doing the basics. Our ailing power utility surprised most of us yesterday when it announced that it had made some profit for the interim period, but it did warn major losses, 20 billion rand losses projected for the full year. The Eskom chair and acting chief executive Jabu Mabuza took us through the results yesterday, and I asked him whether or not Andre De Reiter, the man who's been identified as group chief executive from the 15th of January next year, is in fact the right guy for the job.
I have had the privilege of being part of the panel that interviewed Andre. Andre has been found of the six candidates that we have interviewed to be the most suitable, available, willing and able of all the six candidates. And we have had about 142 people apply for this job, Bruce, from school leavers to 75-year-old people. And of those, we ended up with six, of which the six were four white male. Two of them were non-South Africans, two were South Africans, two Africans, one a South African black, and another one a non-South African black. Of those six, Andre came top as the three that we had to recommend. I have no doubt that at the point that Eskom is at, Andre has what it takes to lead Eskom going forward. It is an unfortunate and, with respect, a bit of a narrow view to look at his track record at NAMPEC, when people are using just share price performance in 5 years. Share price performance is a good indicator, it's a key indicator, but it's only part one indicator. When you listen to the history of why he got to NAMPEC and what debt were in NAMPEC, what were the causes of that debt, is not dissimilar to some of our leading companies on the stock exchange that have seen a third of their value being wiped out because of the businesses they're doing in certain parts of the continent. So I am satisfied that with the work that he has done at Sasol, his track record, and how he has managed to contain and manage this debt at Nampak, as against looking at the sentiment, the value of share price decline, I think he's the right man. I'm very grateful that the government and the shareholder has supported our recommendation for Andre.
And you can...
What I'm asking is South Africans must give Andre the time and the space for him to also try and give his part. For crying out loud, he did not only leave a job that was paying him more, he has agreed to also take less than the average of the last three CEOs were taking at Eskom, as walking the talk, so that understanding that there are some trade-offs, some pain to be taken, that he himself is prepared to say, I'm going to take a pain in the interest of serving my country.
Yeah, Jabu Mabuza, he must be at the end of his tether. Really, he must be. He's doing a big job at Eskom, and we'll look forward to be able to hand over the executive day-to-day responsibilities to Andre de Ruyter next year. We had director of the shareholder activism group Just Share, Tracy Davies, on this week, and she'd just been to the Sasol AGM. She was going to the First Rand AGM yesterday as well to shake the baobab tree, if you like, to try and encourage boards to be more responsive to the environmental crisis that the world faces. We had Roger Jardine, the chairman of First Rand, in last night, and the half of his chairman's statement was all to do with environmental issues and the steps that First Rand is taking to mitigate against funding dirty technologies and that sort of thing. We spoke to Tracy Davies just after the end of the Sasol AGM.
Well, we think we've had some success on that already. At the AGM last year, where there were quite a few activist questions as well, although not as many as today, the company committed to releasing a climate change report this year and releasing emission reduction targets, which it had never done before, and it has done that recently. Unfortunately, the pace of change that's happening on climate change around the world, the scale of the emergency, the speed with which we have to address the problem means that what Sasol has done now is pretty much immediately not enough and obsolete. Raising questions at AGMs is a great way of putting kind of personal pressure on the board, but of course that's really all it is a question at an AGM, and a much more effective way of trying to drive changes within companies is the submission of shareholder resolutions. And that is the particular area where Sasol has continuously blocked attempts to table resolutions on climate risk. Previously it was small activist organizations like ours and the Race Foundation and Theo Boerter. This year, they blocked a climate change resolution that was tabled by the likes of Old Mutual and Sunlum and Coronation, some of Sasol's biggest shareholders. So the chairman of Sasol today, whilst he tried to say that they didn't table the resolution because the issues it addressed had already been addressed in Sasol's climate change report, which I dispute, he also repeated Sasol's position that climate change is not an issue which is within the realm of shareholders to have a view on, that it is purely a management issue.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting. I mean, the shareholders have got to be a lot more aggressive about the future. Otherwise, companies will act with impunity. There's been lots of talk about South Africa's brain drain, the losing of skilled people to other countries. And New Zealand is mopping up a whole bunch of South Africans in particular. And there are places around the world because people are scared about the future. And if you've got the means, you've got the skills, you've got the ability, you've got the guts to do it, people are jumping ship. It happens from time to time in South Africa. Well, we managed to get one back the other day. Only one, as far as I can tell. But Leila Fareed did the unusual thing. She, as the new chief executive of JSE Limited, left Australia and came back to South Africa after 3 years down under. And I asked her how the offer was made and what convinced her to come back home.
So it's obviously a decision that gets taken by the board, and Nku would obviously have been a critical component of that together with the board subcommittee. And it was a far more rapid decision than I had intended. In fact, I sort of packed up quite quickly when I made the decision to move. I think it's very familiar territory on both sides. I've been on the board. I've worked with the JSC on two different occasions for 4 years each on very critical flagship projects. And so I'm a very known entity to the JSC. And I suspect that would also have made the hiring process a little bit smoother than had I been a completely unknown entity with repackaged knowledge coming in to take up the reins from Nikki.
When you were out of the South African loop and focusing on building a life in Australia, you would have lost track a little bit of what's going on in South Africa. I'm sure you kept in touch and kept a good idea of what was going on. But it feels different when you're out of the loop. What were the primary changes that you noticed when you got here after a 3-year break?
Well, I think often when you enter a country, I always look for cranes in the sky, development in infrastructure, and the general smell of the place, i.e. the psychology of the country. And so what struck me is the number of enormous buildings that suddenly had popped up in Sandton that I hadn't seen, the sort of Discovery Sassel-type buildings down the road. And that really impressed me. What impressed me was the quality of the highways and infrastructure.
Leila Faree, new chief executive of JSE Limited, on The Money Show earlier on this week. First question in tonight's Brutal Biz Quiz. Who has created Mzansi Poli? Mzansi Poli, created by whom? 011-883-0702-021-446-0567 to play the Brutal Biz Quiz this Friday night.
EWE Show. The Brutal Biz Quiz.
Friday night on The Money Show, Brutal Biz Quiz time. Who created Mzansi Poli? 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. Tabo, you're up first this evening. Who created Mzansi Poli?
Hi, Bruce. It's Nando's.
Nando's, absolutely right. The Nando's. This ad was Andy Rice's advertising hero. Which day, according to popular explanation, represents the point in the year when retailers begin to return to profit, going from being in the red to being in the black?
Is it Black Friday?
It is Black Friday. Good guess, Tubbo. Good guess. The earliest evidence of the phrase Black Friday suggests the term may have originated in Philadelphia to describe heavy and disruptive pedestrian traffic, but there's so many myths and so much nonsense around the idea of what was the origin of Black Friday. It's hard to define. Which company's JSE code is T-O-N? Tango, Oscar, November.
Is it Tongaat Hewlett?
It is Tongaat Hewlett. We'll take either Tongaat or Tongaat Hewlett today. PwC released a damning report into Tongaat Hewlett's former management. And TON, if you invested in it, you lost a ton of money. So I suppose that was a warning to anybody who did it. And then I'd like to know from you, and Tabo, if you get this one right, I'm going to make you the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. Who is the very, very famous author behind the books The Tipping Point, What the Dog Saw, and Other Adventures, and a new one called Talking to Strangers?
Is not Malcolm Gladwell by any chance?
It is Malcolm Gladwell by any chance. And Tabo, you're not giving anybody else a chance to play, which is marvelous. Well done to you, Tabo, Wizard of the Brutal Biz Quiz on this Friday night. Tabo takes it with no trouble whatsoever. Our regular book reviewer this week, Ian Mann, reviewed Talking to Strangers. We had another book question for you this evening. The book Trackers is being made into a TV series, and the author is Dion Mayer. That could have been another one I could have asked, but I think he'd done enough hard work to be called the Whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz on this Friday night.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that believes long-term partnerships deliver sustainable results. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Well, there pretty disappointing Friday. I mean, I knew that there'd be some bad news coming out of that report into Tonga today. It was always going to be messy. PwC going around and sniffing in the drawers of Tonga at the behest of the new chief executive, who's tasked them to say, look, let's find out what went wrong with the accounting practices of Tonga. And the report that is out today is really damning of former executives. But the one thing that starts to come out of multiple reports into the failure of companies is the report of the overarching, the all-powerful deity at the top of organizations, people that that don't get stood up to, people that don't get challenged, who don't brook criticism. And if you work in an organization where there isn't a free flow of information, particularly a free flow of information up, and if executives can't take bad news, you're working in the wrong place. It's going to end in tears at some point. Maybe not now, maybe not next year, maybe not the year after, but at some point, companies run out of luck. Tonga ran out of luck. Executives ran out of luck. And people who work for that company may very well run out of luck if there's big lawsuits that come up against that firm. It's a tragedy when mismanagement causes ordinary people to suffer. SAA, of course, a case in point over the last decade or so. Multiple boards, multiple chief executives, multiple catastrophes. Hopefully we get some clarity as to what the future of that airline is before too long. That's it for this Friday. Thank you very much for listening. A great pleasure to have been with you this week, and I look forward to doing it all again next time. Good night.